Hey, this is James from SurvivalPunk.com.
And this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm stoked, dude.
Stoked for the interview?
Yes, I am stoked. I am really looking forward to this interview.
Yes. It's great to be able to get some good people for interview.
It gives us credibility.
Well, it's fun just to be able to chat with people that you that I want to chat with. It's an opportunity. That's the reason to have a podcast, is to talk to people that are famous.
Absolutely. I mean, I never thought I'd be talking to these kind of people before. I mean,
exactly.
Especially our guest coming up.
Yeah. I'm gonna call myself out. This is a generic interview pre-recording. We're going to knock it out, and then we'll jump right into our amazing interviews. Because we have two interviews back-to-back, and, you know, we gotta hustle to make this happen.
Yeah, because guess what? All those celebrity invites onto the show, they're actually happening now.
Yeah. Actually, I had one person hear the invite and was like, hey, I'll make it easy for you and I'll do the work. Can I come on your show? And I was like, yes!
Absolutely. And we're going
to So your invites are being heard. Well, I did share on to Facebook the episode, and then they listened to it and were like, yep, can I come on the show? Mm-hmm. Yes, you can.
And and when you're listening to this, please don't think that you screwed up and are listening to the same episode twice. We're just using this intro twice.
Yes, and then we will get rid of this pre-recorded interview after these two episodes. So let's jump into the pre-recorded intro so we could knock out these interviews.
Right. Yes. And keep in mind, our podcast comes to you from the good people over at jmbullion.com and survivalgearbags.com.
Yes. jmbullion.com, the best place online to get all of your gold and silver needs at the best prices with free shipping. Go to jmbullion.com, and they've got reminted crash silver. So there's a boat crash.
Really?
During World War II.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think you mentioned
an episode. Yeah, so they have silver from that made into collector's edition coins. So
melted down, reprinted into coins.
Head to survivalpunk.com and click their banner.
Right.
Next up, we've got survivalgearbags.com.
A great place to you need a survival gear bag to keep all the money, all the coins that you bought off of jmbullion.com.
Actually, I keep usually at least 1 ounce of silver in my bug-out bag.
Well, you see there, you're knocking it out, two in one shot. Survivalgearbags.com, where you can go to buy really cool stuff and buy stuff to put that stuff in.
Yes. And so, yeah, make sure you go to survivalpunk.com and click on the banner. Survival Gear Bags actually is an affiliate link. So if you buy something from there, I get 3 nickels. And then last time I cashed out my money with Kelly, I bought the amazing 299-day book series up to, like, book 5.
Yes, which is really important on one of these interviews.
Yes. Only if you listen to the 299 Days podcast, episode 19, I think, then you'll hear that, you know, I use those books to review. And I was looking at the traffic. I send a massive amount of people to survivalgearbags.com. Thank you, guys. But no one's buying anything. So please support Kelly. He's a supporter of the Survival Punk podcast and blog. He's a Survival Punk Army sponsor, and you can get 10% off by joining the Survival Punk Army.
The Survival Punk Army wants you!
Yes. You can help support Survival Punk podcast, me and Mike, and the blog by considering joining the Survival Punk Army.
If you like us, it's only 20 cents an episode. That's what it works out to. Plus all the great deals you're going to get all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, you get 11. I counted up because I was more hustling. You get 11 discounts to different people on the internet. You get 2 ebooks. You can get all of the Survival Punk podcast episodes in zip files to download 10 episode blocks. So you can get right now episodes 1 through 10.
You're going to get exclusive content that you can't get on the regular website.
Right. When this first episode comes out, or this first interview episode comes out, you'll be able to download 11 through 20. I'll bundle those up. And then me and Mike produce some exclusive some video footage you can't find elsewhere, tips and tricks and whatnot.
If you want that, there's only one place to get it, by joining the Survival Punk Army.
Yes.
At survivalpodcast.com.
And with that
survivalpunkpodcast.com. Jack Spearco is not going to help you on this one.
With that said, we're going to wrap up this opening intro and jump right into our first interview episode. And our first interview of this two-part episode.
Yes. Get ready, boys and girls, because we are about to interview the one and only the great.
Hey, this is James from SurvivalPunk.com.
And this is his co-host, Mike. And we're really thrilled to bring you our guest for this evening.
Glenn Tate, author of the 299 Days book series. Glenn, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing good.
Oh, I am doing fantastic. This is great. I'm loving this. We got credibility now.
Yes. I hear you're mobile podcasting tonight, Glenn.
I am. I'm stuck in Seattle's very famous traffic. The President of the United States came to town today.
Lucky you.
Raised money from a bunch of Microsoft billionaires. There's still a little lingering effects on the road.
Oh, I can imagine.
The President didn't have anything else to do because there's nothing else going on, like southern border or Ukraine, so he was out fundraising. So
nice.
I'm glad you got a chance to do that and mess up traffic in Seattle.
Awesome.
Well, my fellow Americans, when you want a good cup of Starbucks, go straight to the source.
Yeah. All right. So, Glenn, I'm going to start out with I have a different take for this interview than what I've heard you do before, which Survival Punk is I'm really trying to push the fitness that I feel is lacking across the rest of the prepper community.
Yeah, that's something that people seem to forget. I mean, when you're prepping your life, you need to prep your body too.
Right, and you really turned your life around and got fit when you realized things are bad and you're not fit enough to handle them. But I got a couple. Just tell me who Glenn Tate is and what is this 299 Days book series.
Yeah, Glenn Tate is me. That's not my real name, but I am the Grant Matson character in the books. And about 97% of book one is real because it's a 10-book series. And it's kind of a rational prepping series. We'll get into that in a moment. But I wrote these books not thinking anybody would ever read them. I just started writing them, and I kind of couldn't stop. And I didn't even have a publisher or anything. I just wrote 10 books and called up a publisher, and first one I called said, would you like a 10-book deal? And I remember being stunned. I thought, man, nobody's supposed to read this. This is why everything's so real in them, right? Because I wasn't making stuff up. I wasn't trying to be a fiction writer. I was writing down what happened to me, what I'm seeing, what I did, and then I project into the future. Only book one takes place in the present tense, but I got to tell you, book two is when the collapse happens, and there's some spooky stuff going on. Like yesterday, one of my lines in the book, I wrote it 3 years ago, was the governor of Texas saying, if the federal government won't secure our borders, Texans will. That's almost a verbatim quote
from
what the
Rick
governor
Perry.
Of Texas said yesterday, which, I mean, it's stuff like that that blows my mind. So the line between present and future is really blurry with these things, which is kind of a good problem to have, I guess. But anyway, so I'm this guy, I'm this guy, grew up kind of a redneck guy, poor guy in a country area, decided I wanted to be a, you know, suburban, quote, successful guy and, you know, do all that kind of American dream stuff. Did that, became a lawyer. I work in a legal and political realm right now in Olympia, Washington, the capital of Washington State, and do kind of political stuff. I have a good front row seat to bad things that are going on, and I can write about. So that's one of the reasons I have a pen name, by the way, is my career would be over if people figured out who I really am. So I hope none of them are listening to your podcast, because I have a pretty distinctive voice, very whining and nasally, I might add, and so they'll probably be on to me. But anyway, so I'm this guy, a suburban guy, I get fat, I call it the Docker years in the books, you know, I'm wearing polo shirts and Dockers, I'm trying to learn how to golf, and this is all crap to me, because I grew up poor, and I mean, if you grew up poor, golfing is like misery. So anyway, I decided I need to prep. 2008 financial collapse had a lot to do with that. And then I start realizing all these things that's wrong with me, and it's wrong with this suburban lifestyle that we live, where we're all dependent on everything. And one of the things, coming back to the fitness you mentioned, James, you know, I was fat. I was moving some prepping supplies in a storage rental storage area thing that I had. Of course, I had to do that because my wife was not on board, and I had to hide everything from her. That's another continuing theme in these books.
Right.
You got a guy prepping, and his and his wife, you know, is opposed to it, and she has normalcy bias, and she doesn't think anything bad's going to happen. She thinks I'm crazy and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was walking up the stairs to the second floor thing in the storage shed with, you know, I don't know, a box of pancake mix or something like that, and I was winded. I could barely make it, and I thought to myself, I'm dead. I mean, I'm going to freaking die when I have to chop wood all day, when I have to guard stuff, when I maybe have to run after people or run away from people, or I have to hold a rifle all day. This isn't any kind of like luxury thing. This isn't working out to like look at myself in the mirror or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is life and death stuff, and you can have all the guns and the food and the water treatment and the comms and the medical stuff you want. And if you can't walk very far, if you can't run, if you can't lift stuff, and, you know, if you can't get in a fist fight and come out on top, I mean, this is real life stuff here that we're all going to be facing. So that made me realize I needed to work out, and I started very slowly a number of years ago, right about the 2008 collapse, as a matter of fact. And I didn't do it just to lose weight, although I did. My former nickname and my name on forums is Heavy G. That used to be kind of describing me well. I jokingly tell people it's my street name. I tell them, now I'm a lawyer with a street name. They don't even know what to make of me. But anyway, so I was Heavy G, and I'm not anymore. I do CrossFit. I hate running, but I do it a little bit because I kind of need to. And I've never felt better. I'm in my mid-40s. One of the things that slowed me down a lot with the fitness thing and kind of was an excuse for me not to do stuff was, just like in the book, remember I said 97% of book one's real?
Right.
Yeah. I was born without a left pectoral muscle, which is no big deal. It doesn't affect much, like day-to-day living. But when you don't have a pectoral muscle, it's kind of hard to pull yourself up and hold things over your head. It's the muscle that locks your arms in place, especially over your head.
That kept you out of the military.
What's that?
In the book, I read last night in the book that it actually kept you out of enlisting.
Yeah, no, it kept me out of the military, which is, you know, maybe a good thing, although I would have been spectacular at that. But, yeah, it kept me out of the military. And so I kind of used that as an excuse. I said, oh, I can't get strong. I can't train with weights. Then I discovered CrossFit. I'm a huge fan. I jokingly call it a cult.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you recruit other members into the cult and all that other stuff. Of course, it's not a cult. I don't want to freak anybody out there. But
I'm not so sure from everything I've heard this guy talking about.
What's that?
I'm not so sure it's not that much of a cult. I've heard this guy talking about it, and he's got to become a full-fledged torch-carrying member.
Yeah. No, it's a great thing. It's great. I mean, it's functional fitness, and that's what this is all about here. And by the way, I don't work out and stuff. Like I say, look at myself in the mirror. It's all functional. It's got to be practical. And now I go out and the guys on the team, I mean, I describe in the book, they're all real guys. I can go out, and, you know, they're 20 years younger than I am, right?
Right.
And so I got to be able to keep up with these guys. And you know, we shoot all day. Sometimes we move all day, carrying heavy stuff. I mean, you know, I got to work out to fit into my body armor is basically what it is. And when you're in your mid-40s, you know, that's a serious consideration. So I do it for practical stuff. And so one of the tests I have for whether this CrossFit thing or fitness in general is, you know, worth it, I had to fly on a plane from Seattle to Florida, which is pretty long and miserable. I'm 6'2", and so the seats are pretty miserable for me. And for the first time ever, after doing CrossFit for a while, I didn't hurt when I got off the plane. It was a nonstop. And so, you know, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about is I'm fit all over. And I'm not like ripped or anything like that. I mean, but, you're just kind of like, you can handle stuff. And now there's so many advantages to this. I sleep better. That's probably the main thing. I mean, I sleep like a baby because, I mean, I'm tired. I get up at 4:30 and start CrossFit at 5:30, and then I, you know, go to work, and by the time I've done CrossFit and I'm driving to work, you know, the hardest part of my day is over, right? That's a pretty cool thing. And you know, one of the other benefits I talked about in the book, but it's real, my wife digs it. I'm just going to leave it at that. I mean, you know, that's what I live for, gentlemen, so let's not discount that. So anyway, big fan. And I think you have to be fit at some level pull off this survival stuff. And if you're not fit, don't quit prepping just because you're not fit. I mean, keep prepping and get in shape. And getting just a little bit in shape is a really big deal, and it's going to help you out because you got to, you know, you're graded on a curve when it comes to survival, right? I mean, if you're a little bit in shape, you're probably better off than 90% of the people out there. And, you know, if somebody's chasing a group of people and you're running way faster, I mean, the ones that can't run as fast, they're the ones that are going to get thrown in the chipper shredder or whatever, what fate awaits them or some horrible thing, right, and not you. So keep in mind that being a little bit fit puts you, you know, ahead of most of the crowd and just keep doing it. Now, one thing I got to admit when it comes to survival and fitness, I think after the collapse, a lot of people will slowly and painfully, kicking and screaming, will get into shape. We'll be eating a lot less, especially carbohydrates and bad stuff. And we will be out chopping wood and we'll have to walk places because gas will be, you know, probably not very plentiful. And so I think people will slowly get in shape as a natural consequence. And then I think a lot of people, and I talk about this in the book too, a lot of people, you know, into the collapse and towards the end of the collapse, come to this conclusion, they're like, man, we were living crazy. That was nutty. I mean, being on the couch all the time and everything, and it made no sense, and we're happier now. And one of the other ways this plays out, and it's in the first chapter of the book, in fact, the first lines of the entire book are, you know, that I'm at a mirror getting ready, I'm getting in a tuxedo, getting ready for the inauguration of a patriot governor for the new state of Washington. See, kind of know how the book ends, right?
Yeah.
And but that's okay. The good guys win. That's a short story. But no, and I'm putting on this tuxedo and my pants are falling down. And that's a great way to start a 10-book series. You know, damn, his pants are falling down again. You kind of go, what's that all about? But I think there's going to be a lot of that. Clothes will fit pretty baggy during the collapse. So I can't stress the fitness thing enough. And it's not like I've been in great shape my whole life and I'm telling people to do something that, you know, quite honestly, it's hard to do. I mean, I've been the fat guy on the couch. I've been the guy without a pectoral muscle who couldn't possibly, you know, do pull-ups. Now I crank them out because I've developed muscles all over, you know, my back and my arms and everything, and I've compensated for it. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, if I can do this, honestly, anyone can do this because I'm not some kind of superhero guy. I am so normal, it would freak you out. And if I can do it, anyone else can do it.
Awesome. You covered so much of the questions that I was going to ask you. your lawyer skills, you preemptively answered my questions. I do have quite a bunch of questions left, though.
You bet.
So, comments like that's amazing. I've been doing CrossFit only since this December, and I'm down 70 pounds. Like
holy Toledo.
Yeah, for like I'm down to 200 from like 270 since December, and clothes do fit baggy. I still have some of my I'm a manager in my day job for now. And some of the manager clothes, because I don't feel like upgrading them and buying new ones, they're still size like 42, and I'm wearing a size 36 now. So, you know, I'm cranking down the belt as far as it'll go.
Yeah, he's actually tried to give me some of his old clothes, because between the two of them, he's the fit one, I'm the fat one. And believe it or not, at one point in the history, it used to be the other way around. He used to be much bigger than I am now. And it's just amazing to watch this transformation. And honestly, between him and... between some books I've been reading lately, including yours, I'm actually feeling very inspired. I was describing to my wife last night, because she was seeing me read this book, I mean, and just trying to fly through it. And I stand by this. I felt like your book is like a semi-fictional story set in a prepper's guide. I mean,
that's a great description. I'm going to use that. Thank you for that. That's awesome, man. I'm going to listen to this podcast and write that one down.
Oh, well, thank you. But, I mean, it really does. I mean, it's like you're giving a step-by-step instruction on how you got started. Went through the whole thing. I mean, it was just amazing. I've never heard it explained that way where it made that much sense. It was just that easy to follow.
And believable. Like, I really related to the, you know, the first book. I had some pretty big issues with my father, so I was like, oh, I could get along with this guy. Like, we both have, you know, crap dads. And, like, at some point in the book, you were talking about drinking PBRs, and I'm like, I drink, you know, at the time, I haven't drank in a couple months, but I was like, I drink PBRs. It was, your characters and, you know, yourself in the book come off very real, as opposed to...
Very earnest, very believable.
Yeah, I'm the biggest not fan of James Wesley Rawls. They will never send me a review book for him because I hate the man. It's just
wow.
Yeah,
don't sugarcoat it, man. Tell us how you really feel.
It's, I mean, that's why I say that Glenn's books are the gold standard in prepper fiction because they're real people. You can relate to them. You have a better suspension of disbelief reading his books than you do some of the other ones where it's like everyone's the same and they're a person that I do not want to hang out with.
Yeah, and I'll be honest. I started reading the first book just to prepare for this interview, and now I'm just wanting to read the other nine. I'm going to have to borrow the rest.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you mentioned the realism, and I said earlier about 97% of the book one is real.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that 97 number I just made up because I'm a fiction writer and I get to make shit up. That's what
right.
I do. But anyway... the thing is that I put the good and the bad about myself in there. And here's an example. One of the realism things, and you mentioned drinking, and I used to drink a lot more than I do. But I tell the story about showing up to take my SAT test in high school to try to get into college. I mean, I was blasted from the night before.
Oh, I love that part
and
of the book.
I show up to take the SATs, and I'm still drunk, and I started sobering up. I started to actually have a hangover towards the end of the test. Now, who does that? That's the most irresponsible thing in the planet. And I wrote it down because, number one, it was true, and number two, it illustrated a point I was trying to make. And again, I wrote these books thinking nobody would ever read them. Who would put that stuff in about themselves if they, you know, had a big ego or whatever? But it is real, and, you know, a classic example of things being real, and me, you know, just writing down what I know, is the character Pal. Everyone's like, oh, that's crazy, man.
Yeah.
A 6-foot Korean gunfighter who sells insurance. You know, he's like a tactical team leader and tactical instructor, like on the weekends and during the week as his day job. He sells insurance and he's a 6-foot Korean badass. I mean, right, that's just all made up. You know, you must be really creative. And I was like, no, he's my friend, and if you've seen the Kickstarter video that we have up when we did a Kickstarter campaign to make a movie, you get to see Pal, and people look at him, and he's like exactly as described in the book. All the guys on the team are just like in the book, and that's the realism that people can sense. You know, people can smell BS like a mile away, and when I just wrote about stuff, it's really, you know, been appreciated, and I think that explains why the series is doing so well, especially when people get hooked into the beginning books. And then, you know, I kind of established credibility, if you don't mind me saying, with readers by all this realism. And then as you start moving out into the future tense from the present tense, everything I'm describing about a scenario for a collapse, I think is very believable. First of all, I think it's believable because it's exactly what's going to happen, and it's how things happened in Russia in the 90s and Argentina in 2000 and in Bosnia in the 90s. So it's, you know, it's very believable in that sense. There's no meteors, there's no zombies, there's no cannibalism, there's no, you know, meteor strikes and that kind of stuff. But so it's believable, and it helps by establishing the credibility early on, which again was not my intention. It's just like how it happened. I mean, stories about getting drunk and having Korean friends who are gunfighters. I mean, and so it just flows. And then people, especially those skeptical ones, maybe those ones who are on the fence and are like, I don't know, this prepping thing seems kind of weird to me. When I've shown that I'm a real person and I've got some real facts and I predict a bunch of stuff that happens years later, they can see that. Then when I project in the future and say, this is what a partial collapse looks like, they go, hey, man, this guy's legit. I mean, So that was my goal, and it worked out well.
Now, one question I had for you, with all the realism that you put in the book, especially using so much of your own life as material, does it worry you that somebody might put two and two together that shouldn't and figure out exactly who you really are?
Yeah, it is a concern, and you mentioned people who shouldn't, and there have been a couple people who are friends of mine who are patriots, who figured out who I was. I mean, they were drawn to the books because, you know, they're patriots and preppers and all that. And, you know, I went coyote hunting with a guy, and I mentioned to him that I use a lighter rifle because I'm missing my left pectoral muscle. And then 2 years later, he's reading this book, and he said he got to about page 12 and read about the pectoral muscle, this Olympia lawyer, and he dropped the book on the ground and called me, and said, "You're Glenn Tate." And I was like, "Oh, yeah." So, but nobody has found out, at least that I know of, who shouldn't. I expect, by the way, that the authorities know who I am and all that other stuff. I'm not bothered by that. I mean, I'd rather I didn't have to think about it. I'm not paranoid. I don't think the government's out to get me. I think the government does bad things, but I just have decided not to become a paranoid weirdo and just roll with it. Besides, I think the message from the books, and this will be more apparent the farther you go into them, is it's by no means pro-government. It's about the government sucking and being evil and doing terrible things and getting overthrown, right? Okay, mm-hmm, so it's not pro-government. But it's not, you know, it's not rah, 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 go out and hurt people, and it's not everyone in government sucks. It's more, I think, realistic, which is there are good people and bad people in government. There are people, there are good cops and there are bad cops, good military and bad military. I mean, there's no way to generalize about this. So it's not, you know, a kill everyone in uniform kind of message, because that's not me, and I don't think it's realistic, and I don't think it's a practical approach for people getting through a crisis. So I have to assume, I don't know, it's not like I talk to the government very much. Well, I kind of do my job with it, not in this context, but, you know, they ought to be, they shouldn't be terribly worried about me and the message in this book. And, you know, that is what it is, but I'm sure they know who I am and whatever. No biggie. I'll buy them donuts if they want, right?
Yeah,
there you go.
That'll sue them over. So let's jump back into the CrossFit for a second. I had a bunch of little questions wrote down, and you kind of went through most of them. You went through how you got refit and, you know, getting fit. And what I feel about CrossFit is it generally makes the rest of your life easier and better. General physical preparedness, from Greg Glassman. I could play with like my friend's kids now and run around the park and stuff. So there's that. So Ava, what do you say was your worst workout ever at CrossFit? What's the one that you're just like,
I don't remember the name of it because I was like all like almost blacking out. It was horrible. Here I said, yes. You know, anyone can do this. I'm gonna go sit. I remember this. It lasted 42 minutes.
Oh,
which as you, it took me 42 minutes. I'm sure other people did it much sooner. And it was. Oh shoot! I wish I remember the name, but it was like it was so awful, and it was at the end of a training cycle we were doing, and then everything got a little bit better. But it was the only bad one. This is interesting. I was in a place recently where it's 4,000 foot elevation, and of course, you know, Seattle area is at sea level, right?
So right.
I didn't factor in the increased elevation, and there was a workout. It was 10 sets of. Running 250 meters, 10 Russian kettlebells, at 35 pounds, and then 10 sit-ups. So it's 100 of all those things I just mentioned. I'm like, this is not a problem. I can do this at sea level. Oh, let me tell you something. It was 80 degrees at 4,000 feet.
Oh, boy.
And I thought I was going to go meet Jesus there at around 5, and I was like, oh, my goodness, this is bad news. So that was pretty bad, but... I've had a couple, especially in the beginning, workouts where I got really sore. Full disclosure, it felt like I was in a car wreck for the first couple weeks.
Oh, yeah.
But then it didn't. And now the cool thing is, it's kind of like being in a gang, right? Now with CrossFit, there would be so much pain if I tried to get out of it. Like, you know, like a gang would hunt you down and kill you, right? So you don't want to do that. So you've got to stay in the gang or bad things will happen to you. I know this sounds crazy, but, you know, getting back into CrossFit shape is is unpleasant, and so it totally motivates you to keep doing CrossFit. And that sounds like a bad thing, but I'm telling you, it's a good thing, because listen, I know me. I will. I'm just based on a true story from the doctor years. I will eat a bucket of KFC chicken if you give me a chance. I will sit on that couch. I will drink beer. I will eat potato chips. That is, I mean, I don't like it now, and that much grease would probably make me sick. But I mean, I am that guy who, you know, needs something to get me going there, and not being sore because I quit for a while would be something. I'll tell you another thing, and you know. I'm just going to be super honest with everybody because nobody knows who I really am, right? But there are a lot of cool people. I go there for the other people, and there are some very attractive, charming women.
Very true.
CrossFit. And I'm telling you what, that's a great way to start your day with beautiful, charming women. I mean, and they're not like supermodel, like, you know, I don't like that kind of stuff. That's not, I don't like that. These are just really nice, fit, beautiful, turkey, intelligent, fun people. Why wouldn't you want to be around people like that?
Yes. And most of them can outlift you.
And most of them what?
Can outlift you, especially when you're first starting.
Oh, yeah. No, especially with the pectoral muscle thing. I mean, one time this woman, she jokingly said, you know, it was a medicine ball, and I was doing wall ball.
Oh.
And she said the recommended weight, the RX, for guys, it was 20 pounds, and I had a 14-pound ball. And she goes, "Hey, RX for guys is 20." I said, "Yeah, it's 20 for guys with two pectoral muscles." So, but people are cool about it. And that's one thing that I didn't expect, because in my world, you know, only jocks lifted weights, mm-hmm. and they were always kind of dicks. And
yeah.
And I tried lifting weights in high school, and basically, you know. A bar basically fell across my chest because my left side came out, right?
Oh, my God,
you know, yeah. It wasn't a very heavy thing. It was super embarrassing, right? And so I came to believe that all these weightlifters were, like, on steroids and complete jackasses and were going to laugh at me. And that is not at all what CrossFit is about, at least my gym. And I've traveled
right.
around. When I do business travel, I go to other CrossFit gyms, which is cool. Collect the T-shirts, right? And,
right.
I've seen it at all the other gyms too. And new people get welcomed and new people get taken under everybody's wing, and we want to see them back. And there's some people that are in pretty bad physical shape, that, you know, we feel like, and those of us that have been there a while doing this, we feel like we've succeeded when we see them come back week after week, and we see them start getting stronger, and we see them lose weight, and we see them, you know, their posture improve and all these other things. It's like, this is so cool to help people out like this. So, yeah, my story is about it feeling like a car wreck notwithstanding. People ought to do this.
Absolutely. I mean, you touched on it a lot. The community aspect at CrossFit is really what keeps me going back. Because I've had a 24-hour gym membership for years, and I could probably count the times I've gone in both hands. Like, if it's just me by myself, I'm just not going to go. I'm not that motivated. But knowing that they'll call me and ask, "James, where are you at? Why haven't you been here?" That's, you know, and you know, there's other events like me and a couple of my CrossFit box. We went and ran the Tough Mudder here in Nashville, and that was a feat there.
You know, I just got to say something. This is kind of inspirational to me and motivational, because I'm sitting here listening to you two about your worst days and CrossFit and weightlifting and everything and gym memberships. Meanwhile, I'm scared of those 2 minutes that Grant spent on the elliptical.
Oh, oh wow.
No, that's true. I mean, that's where I started. Two or three, I can't remember which it was, but if you say it was two, you've probably read the book more recently than I have. And yeah, that's what it was. And I was dying and I was wheezing and I thought, you know, I was actually sore after a couple minutes. Couple minutes. And that's not like, you know, shorthand for 10 or 15. That's like a couple minutes on an elliptical thing. And, you know, I remember my wife said, you know, can I get in a gym membership? You know, she almost didn't say anything. She was like, yeah, you want one, or you want me to include you? And I go, yeah. And she's like, really? Wow, that's kind of crazy. And then, you know, it started off slow. And, you know, you don't need to do gym memberships or even CrossFit. I mean, especially if you're starting. I mean, walking is good.
Yeah.
There's a million things you can do. You know, the other thing that being fit is good for is, and not just running around and doing tactical stuff and all that other thing, but just all the stuff I do out of my cabin, you know, my real cabin, it's for real, and just like it's described in the book. I mean, I got to move stuff around, I got to lift stuff, I got to build things, I got to, you know, hold plywood over my head and all these things. That stuff used to just destroy me, and it does it now. You know, in little things, like walking around Costco. I mean, I should put a pedometer on me sometime and see how many miles that is. I don't know, might be a mile or something, but I mean, even those weekend errands, I used to get winded in Costco. And, you know, and now I can just do those, and I'm like, for my wife, I'm like, hey, honey, I mean, you know, what else do we need to do? I knocked off the Costco run, you know, what else do we need? And it's just a better way to live. And believe me, if this wasn't an improvement in my quality of life, I wouldn't be doing it. James wouldn't be doing it. Nobody would do this if it didn't improve your life. It just wouldn't happen. I don't do stuff that sucks.
Right. All right. Let's see. What else? What else do I got? I got lots of good stuff. So, you're into CrossFit. Did you change your nutrition from what you talk about in the book to any like the paleo or the zone or anything? Or do you just, I think in the book you mentioned that you just like started eating smaller portions and started making better food decisions. So have you changed that at all?
No, I still do. I do smaller portions. I kind of spread things out. I used to, you know, cause where I grew up, you know, you ate giant meals. Cause I mean, I worked out in the field, people logged, they were out logging for, you know, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 hours.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like coal mining. We don't have any coal mines out here, but I mean, if you're underground for 12 hours, you got to eat a big meal and you don't get many breaks. And so, well, that's not my white collar world. So, and it took me, you know, a long time to get away from that big meal thing. It was like snacks or like some horrible thing. And so now I have, you know, mealets, and I try to do a good job with it, but I don't get psycho about it. I've just kind of got some daily routines down. And so smaller portions are a big deal. I'm what I call quasi-paleo. I watch the carbs pretty closely, and I do have some carbs, of course. You need some. But they're more complex and slower release. Steel roll, oats, for example. But I do a lot of eggs. I mean, egg whites in particular. You can get carts of egg whites at Costco for not a lot of money. I do smoothies. I started, and this has been really successful, at least for me, not eating a big dinner. What I do is I kind of eat three or four little meals throughout the day, and then when I come home, I have a smoothie, you know, some fruit, some egg white protein powder, and some almond milk, and put it all together, and then I wake up, and I'm kind of hungry, and then I have like a little, you know, snack bar, protein bar, not a sugary thing.
Right.
And then I go to CrossFit. And so I'm not going to bed with, you know, 2,000 calories that got nothing to do but enter my system and not get burned off and turn into fat. So not eating big dinners, really dinners at all. I mean, but not being hungry, because when I get hungry, I can't concentrate. I can't do my job. And apparently, according to my wife, I get a little snappy and mean, which apparently is true. Especially if somebody gets in the way of my food, food blocker. Don't be a food blocker around me, because it's not going to be pretty. So, but that's what I did. But I try to eat lean meat, eggs, and a lot of vegetables, a lot of fruits. So that's why I call it a modified paleo.
So a lot of unprocessed foods.
And sugar are poison. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, if people want to do a modified paleo or whatever, anything's better than, you know, McDonald's for every single meal. I mean, if you could eat most of your meals unprocessed, you'll get great results, is what I feel.
That's like I tell everybody. The only place in the grocery store you should really be shopping is around the outside walls.
Well, yeah. I mean, as a prepper, there's and I just did an article, Glenn, on why Spam is not that bad. And it's only six ingredients, and I think one of the six ingredients is water. It's gluten-free. It's
and just a bunch of other stuff. And I was like, after reading that, I'm like, no, Spam may actually be the perfect survival food. Like, it's not bad. And it's tasty, you know, fried up and stuff.
Oh, I love Spam. I've got several cans.
Well, you know, when I did Search and Rescue in high school, and I talk about that in the book.
Yeah.
We would bring Spam in, and we would cook Spam over a campfire.
Yes.
And I'm telling you what, you know, when you've been outside and you've been carrying somebody in a litter through the woods, you need salt.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
You need salt. Now, you guys, where you live, holy smokes, you need salt. I mean, that's a gross, man, all the sweating you guys have got to do. And that's another thing. People forget about salt, you know. And the whole, the carbs thing, it just amazes me. You know, American culture has been told that you got to eat pasta and you got to eat bagels and you got to eat, you know, all this stupid carb stuff. And it just amazes me. It's like a cinnamon roll at the mall is healthy.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Eating some lean beef or like turkey, a big turkey breast or something, that's bad for you? I mean, really? I'll tell you something. Carbohydrates and me, I know this is true of everybody, but I think it's especially true of me. If I eat that cinnamon roll, for example, and I'd probably get sick if I did because it'd be like a sugar overload
right now.
But if I eat that cinnamon roll, I guarantee you in an hour I would be starving. And if I eat that turkey breast, I'm good for 4 hours, 6 hours, whatever it might be.
Right.
And that's the other thing, you know, it's not just the carbs are bad for you, but it's like crack. You want more. And that's another problem with carbs. So, yeah, stay away from carbs. Now, there's an interesting thing with prepping and carbs that I found, and that is, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, the kind of foods that I typically store, you know, a lot of pancake mix, which
right.
is white flour, oatmeal, which is okay, you know, biscuit mix, spaghetti and spaghetti sauce and all these kind of things. So the food I store is pretty carb-centric, but that's just the anchor stuff. Number one, it's cheap. I guess more importantly than that, it's easy to vacuum seal or buy
right.
a bag or whatever you do. And you can get it, you know, in bulk, and you've got to have that kind of stuff. I obviously plan on supplementing, like, a lot with, you know, game meat. I have a clam bed in, you know, at my cabin. I mean, they just freaking grow. I mean,
nice.
Like all the clams and oysters you could possibly ever eat. And, you know, that's the perfect food. It's all protein, and it's got all kinds of digested algae in it. I mean, it's like amazingly good for you. So I would supplement it with a bunch of other stuff and hopefully fresh fruit and, you know, canned fruit that other people had. But yeah, I'm gonna have my anchors of you know, this bad carbohydrate stuff. But I mean, it's not Doritos and it's not, you know, those cinnamon rolls and all that other stuff. So, you know, don't be so against carbs that you never store any food because it's largely carbs. You want those carbs because you'll be moving and exercising a lot more than you probably do right now. And some carbs and salt, I might add, will be a good thing for you. So don't apply peacetime kind of food ideas to a collapse time food situation. Understand that everything changes when a collapse hits, including food choices.
Exactly. So I'm 100% paleo, and I mean, I do like a once a month cheat day occasionally, but here in Nashville, we actually have a cash and carry just like you do. And I occasionally, if I'm driving by it, I'll stop and get one of those 25-pound bags of rice. It's like $12 or something. I mean, it's insurance right there.
See, in that
yeah, they're giving it away.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, at $12 for 25 pounds. And since I don't, you know, I don't really eat anything, any rice that is, I mean, would say like maybe a cup a day, that would last, you know, months for me and my cat.
You know, and it's funny when you talk okay. about the prepping and the cash and carry and the dollar store and the Costco and everything. I'm reading the book and all these popping up, and all I can think is, wow, those stores are all there and I never go to them.
Yeah.
With the exception of maybe the Dollar Tree.
The Dollar Store is an interesting story because it's all real. I just went to a Dollar Store and described what I was doing. And so I'm at the at one of the dollar stores. There's a couple of them. They go by different names, I guess. But I'm at one of them in Olympia, and I was looking for the can openers. I talk about that in the book. I mean, mm-hmm. all these people are going to have all these canned foods, and a lot of people don't even have a can opener, and my kids don't know how to operate one. And I'm not talking the electric one. I'm talking canned one. Obviously, you don't want to rely on electric can opener when there might be no electricity.
Oh, so absolutely.
I started getting the can openers at the dollar store, and, of course, they cost a dollar, right? So yeah. They're not great can openers, but they work pretty well. So I'm at the dollar store, and I go to get some more can openers because I get a couple every time I go there, and they're out of them. And I kind of on a lark, and I thought, I actually thought this would end up making a good story, and it has. I'm telling it on your show, right? So I said to the clerk, I go, hey, you guys seem to be out of, like, can openers. What's the deal? And she goes, yeah, we can't keep them in stock. And I go, so a lot of people come in here and buy can openers, huh? And you haven't seen that before. And she goes, yeah. And I go, this started around, like, August 2012, which is when this one came out. And she said, I don't know, yeah, maybe roughly. So anyway, let's make sure dollar stores are out of can openers, and that'll be the Glenn Tate effect, right? And that will make me happy because that means people are out there prepping.
All right, so I'm going to need advance info on your next book so I can do some insider trading on the next company you're going to wipe out like that.
Oh, yeah, no. Hey, by the time book 9 comes out, and that'll be coming out, let's see. Book 9 will be coming out about Labor Day. It's kind of hard. I mean, it involves cover art. It involves that. I won't go into the whole thing, but it's not like I just hit a send button, right? Yeah. But anyway, and there are no companies in Book 9 because it's about the victory and the beginning of the rebuilding. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, there are no more companies left. But anyway, yeah, and I don't like architects and podiatrists. You'll be reading about that in later books. I mean, nice. I don't really have anything against them, but they end up being bad guys, and I don't know why. Like I say, I just make shit up. I mean, I don't even know where this stuff comes from.
Nice. What do I got next? I think I have one more question on CrossFit or on fitness and whatnot. Do you have a PR that's like your favorite, like your bragging number? Like with me, I just hit a 185 front squat, which I'm super proud of. So that's my favorite PR. So do you have one that you're like, oh yeah, I can do this?
Well, interesting. That's a nice number, by the way.
Thanks.
I keep all my personal records, PRs, on my phone. You know, it's weird. When you said that, the thing that popped in my mind wasn't exactly like a weight. It's this, again, with the pectoral muscle. So,
right.
I had never done a pull-up in my life, and then I did one, and I was just, like, blown away. I mean, it was weird. I mean, I'm in my mid-40s, and I'm like, I never done a pull-up, and it was, like, a weird sensation to do one. Well, so, you know, clap for me. Yay, I was really excited.
Yay.
Three days later, the workout of the day, as you know,
mm-hmm.
Called for seven sets of things, of which seven pull-ups were involved. So that's a total of 49 pull-ups. I went from doing one pull-up 3 days later. I did zero for 40-some years. I did one, and then 3 days later, I did 47 of them. And
nice.
That was the thing that really blew me away about that. And so, yeah, that would be my thing is doing pull-ups, which is different than most people because, you know, most people were born with all their muscles, right?
Right. Congrats on that. That's amazing. I have not got a pull-up yet. I'm still jumping pull-ups, but I'm getting close, though, so I'll be celebrating that victory soon, too. So That's all the fitness ones, I think. And you even answered, we had a whole list of questions about the book, and I think you inadvertently answered most all of them.
Yeah, I think the only question I got left, just wanted to know, I mean, were there any details that you left out that you wish you'd put in or vice versa into the books?
Wow, what a great question. No one's ever asked me that, and that's a really good question. I can say this. I was listening to the audio books, yes, proofs of the audiobooks.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Holding off on a big announcement about that, but trust me, very soon all the books will be out on audio, and
oh,
they
sweet.
Are spectacular. I had 212 people audition to do the audiobooks. Apparently, a lot of people wanted to do them. I mean, which blew me away. Mm-hmm. And Let's see, what can I say about it? Some stuff I can't say about it, but I'm listening to the proofs of them now, and as I was listening, and don't forget, I wrote this stuff, you know, 3, sometimes 4 years ago.
Right.
And I hadn't, I mean, I edited it for the final edit in 2012, and then I edit each book actually a couple times to go back and forth with the editor and publisher and edit again and all the, but that's not really reading it. I mean, that's just like editing it.
Right.
So I hadn't heard, I hadn't actually heard or even read the story for years. And and I got to not only read it, but hear it a couple weeks ago, as a matter of fact. And so that's the background to answer your question. And that is, there's a timeline. I noticed timeline things that I would change if I could, which isn't exactly what you were getting at. And that is, the timeline in especially in book one and to an extent in book two mirrors exactly what was going on. And it seems kind of antiquated now. An example would be in book one, because it really happened that way. I mentioned that I didn't tell the team that I had the cabin. I only told Pal, who came out and saw it. And then so when, you know, the collapse hits, the guys haven't been out to the cabin yet. Well, the guys have been out to the cabin. I mean, they have freaking toothbrushes out there, okay?
Yeah.
We build stuff out there, and they all, you know, are welcome out there. So there's stuff like that that has sort of changed, but I guess the goal isn't to mirror what is current reality.
Mm-hmm.
Things I would have left out, probably stuff about my wife. You know, she's not super mean. She has pretty bad normalcy bias. I think she's much better now.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I don't want people to think I have a mean wife. I mean, you know, again, stuff in book one was true, and she really did put her hands over her ears and refused to listen to
things.
Oh
my goodness.
And all of that. I mean, I couldn't make that up. But I don't want to hurt her feelings, I guess, is the best way to put it, because she doesn't deserve that. What else would I have put in? Well, there's easy stuff. I mean, I would have, you know, predicted that, you know, Russia and Ukraine go to war. I mean, stuff. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah.
You know, right? That doesn't count. I don't know that there would have been much. I mean, everything I'm talking about is such a little detail that readers who haven't lived through it, like I have, I mean, won't appreciate and won't pick up on and won't care. I would have done the same things. I mean, there's not, you know, a character I wouldn't have included. One thing that some people might think that I would have changed that I wouldn't, and that's this. And that's, you know, book one in particular is a lot of sort of insight into me, and, mm-hmm. and you might wonder, what's up with all this insight? Is this guy just like a megalomaniac who wants to just talk about himself? Not that it, I don't think it gets like old and stuff like that, but I mean, it's a fair thought. And I think as you guys read the other books, especially as you get into books 8 and 9, you will see that every single word in book one is a seed that is planted and springs up and has meaning elsewhere. And in fact, I think it's a good idea once all the books are out and people, you know, have read all the books or mm-hmm. listened to the audiobooks, right? Go back and read book one and you'll sit there and you'll go, oh, I see what was going on. Because you can't really tell this story without knowing a lot about basically me, because there have been some absolutely miraculous events in my life, and I catalog them. I mean, you know, I won't go into like the whole list of them, but I mean, they're absolutely miraculous, and you can see that these miraculous things happen for a reason. I'll just leave it vague, because it's either one of these things that takes 20 seconds to say or like 2 hours to fully explain, and we don't have 2 hours and stuff, so yeah.
One thing I just wanted to say about book one, especially the early chapters where you're going through, well, basically your life story. I mean, all the way up to from birth all the way up to marriage and kids. I mean, not trying to blow smoke or just, you know, kiss up or anything like that, but it moves along at what I found, because I'm a voracious reader, and it moves along at a perfect pace, I found. I mean, it really keeps you interested without bogging you down with a lot of unnecessary details. I mean, you really give like just the perfect amount of insight and detail on everything. I mean, like I said, once I picked it up, I could not put it down until I was made to by my wife.
No, you know what? That's really cool. I appreciate that because I didn't know how other people would react. Now, I mean, you know, the book's been wildly popular, and so I guess that's the proof of it. I mean, nobody's ever actually said what you just said, and that's important to me because I can't really judge, you know, the pace of it because, I mean, I spent a couple years writing it, and I you know, and also it's my life and stuff that I think is important, maybe isn't important. So I'm the worst person really on the planet to know, you know, what should be in or not, and for it to flow like you said and be paced the way you said is really great because I can't see it with my own eyes, so I have to rely on others to tell me that. So that's very cool. Thank you.
Oh, that's not a problem. It's completely honest. And one of the most honest things I've said recently.
Really? One thing, I know on your Facebook.
That came out wrong. You got to excuse me. See,
I know on your Facebook, every once in a while, you'll ask for, like, character names for people in the book since you're, like, doing some small re-edits. If you need the name for two people to kill off, James and Mike, you can kill us off.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. Well, what a bummer because book 9 is already edited, and it's, I mean, as far as my part goes.
Right.
And so book 10, I'm currently writing, and that you can throw some names in there. That actually is an interesting aspect to all of this. I wrote 10 books, and you're saying, so why are you writing the 10th book? Well, I wrote 10 books, and we compressed them into 9 because the 10 books, they weren't long enough, and people wanted, you know, they wanted some value. So what we did was we turned 10 books into 9 books, and then that gave me an opportunity to write a 10th book. And here's an amazing thing, and I don't get religious, not everyone's into it, but it's an important piece of context in this whole story. So I'm writing the prologue, the first chapter, which is looking into the future, and I'm writing it, and I said he's going off to be, my character's being honored. He's being called Colonel. He's getting an honorary colonelship because he did some amazing things and all that. And there were 22 irregular units, and you'll read about that, basically guerrilla units. And so I'm writing this, and this is the very beginning of the story, and I hadn't thought through anything, really, except I knew in my head there would be 22 guerrilla units. So I said, you know, and he was one of 22 colonels, and I stopped at 22, and the outside thought, which is a real thing, and I'll just leave it at that, said 43. I'm like, 43? What's up with that? And I laughed. I looked up at the scene, I laughed. I said, okay, you've been right about everything else. I'm just going to roll with it. I just put in that there were 43 colonels. Had no idea why I wrote that in there. Well, fast forward 2 years, and the publisher is saying, you need to write another book. And I'm getting goosebumps even saying this. And I go, how many chapters would it have, like 43? And he goes, yeah, like that's probably about a book. Yeah, 43 chapters. And I go, I got an idea. How about the 10th book is the story of every one of the 43 colonels, and we can tell stories about how there were regular people who started hospitals, and there's a guy who, this little punk kid, right? You know, you got to get that word in there, who starts this ingenious money laundering system to finance the Patriots, right?
Nice.
And all these people, these regular people who are not, you know, SEALs or Green Berets or whatever, do these amazing things. All these things, by the way, and you mentioned the whole lessons and all the instruction, all these things that need to be done in order to change the management structure of a state, as I euphemistically call it. And so there are all these people that, you know, have all these cool stories. And so book 10 is the 43 colonel, and it's the speech and the honor that is given to each one of the 43 colonels, where Governor Ben Trenton, who's a real friend of mine, he's not really the governor, though, because the state's run by communists. But anyway, Ben Trenton is describing, you know, why these people are getting this colonelship, and sometimes the people getting it tell their own story, and you learn about, you know, gold miners, and as I mentioned, the hospital, and somebody running a pack mule smuggling ring, and and, you know, communications guy, guy who developed a dark net internet that, you know, basically, I mean, all these cool things, as I mentioned, the money launderer, which I find to be the most fascinating. And so that's how, just listening to the outside thought, I just put that number in the book, and then it ended up being the perfect thing. And the 43 Curls book, book 10, is going to be spectacular. And it's neat because it's 43 little stories, and you don't have to have read books 1 through 9 to get the 43 Curls. So it could be that one book that you can just hand out to people, and it's just like, yeah, this is some short stories, you'll enjoy them, and then they're going to go, hopefully, hey, well, why are these people doing this? What happened? Yeah. And then you go, hey, there were 9 books. You might want to read those, too.
Awesome.
Oh, absolutely. And that's something I recommend to all of our listeners, to read those first 9 and book 10 as soon as it comes out.
Yeah. I got one more thing, and then I'll let you get back to your traffic, Glenn.
You betcha. Thank you, sir.
So speaking of, like, sort of the outside voice, I really like the quote that it goes something along the lines of, when you're on the right path, you'll know it. Sort of doors open up. So when I started Survival Punk, I've met some great friends in, like, the survival and the blog community. I'm getting to chat with you on the phone. So it just seems like when you're on the right path, good things happen. So tell me about some of that. Like, all the great friends you've made and stuff.
Yeah, no, that's so true. When you're on the right path, great things happen. I have met, and a lot of them I haven't met in person, by the way. They're you know, internet friends.
Right.
Some absolutely amazing people. I call it the Cool Friends Project. And on my website, 299days.com, there's a tab at the top. It's the Cool Friends Project. And how that came about was I met all these cool people, and a lot of them were people that, even before the books came out, you know, I listened to their podcasts, I bought their products, I watched their YouTube channels. I mean, these are people that I was a fan of, right?
Right.
And then the books come out, and then, you know, they want me on their show. I'm like, really? Or like, you know, I'm working with Working Man's Armory right now, which is making a 17th Irregulars AR, and it's set up the way the team, you know, wanted it set up. I mean, it's like the team-equipped thing. It's like the grips we want. It's like the optics we want and all this cool stuff. They're beautiful and all this other stuff. So, you know, I'm working with Working Man's Armory. You know, Jim Fuller at Rifle Dynamics is a fan, and it's nice. Like, you know, we talk on the phone, and it's like, I mean, it's, you know, all these cool people that, I mean, I'm not going to name drop, but it's like I now get a, I have access to these amazing people, and it's really cool. And people, and another cool thing, SKT Industries, for example, they make the slings that the team uses, and I mention them in the book. You know, guys like that, a little teeny company, it's one guy who works in his house, and I probably sold a lot of slings by people reading the book and Googling SKT.
Nice.
And that's cool because I can help him out because he makes a phenomenal product. And so, I mean, you know, all kinds of cool stuff coming up. There might be some more announcements about cool stuff. And it just amazes me, this community that we're in, this prepping community, to an extent that the gun culture, and they kind of mix, and then there's kind of the libertarian political culture too, and they all sort of blend together. But this community is amazing, and it's full of really, really cool people. And the other neat thing that's come out of this is not in the, these aren't people on the Cool Friends Project, but I've met a bunch of people that are either current or many of them are recently retired in intelligence agencies and special operations nice. Units and law enforcement organizations. And, you know, they tell me things that are going on. To the extent the collapse is knowable in advance, my phone is going to be just, you know, vibrating and ringing. And that's really cool. And I've got to, you know, this sounds obnoxious, but I'm going to say it anyway. There's something about a special operations guy calling me bro.
Yeah,
yeah. Stunning. Because I'm an untrained civilian goofball.
Yes.
ETG, untrained civilian goofball, which is in the book. And now
I've
got patches for that. And it really is a great way for people to say, hey, I'm not pretending to be anything I'm not. I'm an untrained civilian goofball. But, you know, when we go and we shoot with SWAT teams and we beat some of them, You know, now they're not full time usually. I mean, the full time guys we can't touch, but the part time SWAT guys, we're like right in the mix. And I'm like, yeah, we're just untrained civilian goofballs, right?
Yeah.
It's stuff like that. And so it's been an amazing, amazing group of people. These are people I'll probably know for the rest of my life. And that's been, that was unexpected. I didn't expect, you know, you guys to like ask me on your show, right? I mean, it's just turned out that way. And that's what makes it cooler. The second I start to think that I'm a big deal is the second this whole thing is over. And
yeah.
I don't really even think I could think I'm a big deal because, like, I'm not. And if I thought I was a big deal, I wouldn't have written all this stuff in the book about, like, on occasion, what an absolute dumb shit I am. So, anyway.
You know, that does bring me to actually one of my favorite moments in book one. It's the first time you're out at the rock quarry shooting, and your gun keeps jamming. I just love the thought that you expressed there. Oh, it must be broken. I got to get a new one.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, no, and so, yeah, I can't fix things on my own. I mean, we have specialists for that, right?
Right.
Yeah, no. I mean, all that stuff. You know, I dropped my magazine, and I remember when I was first time I shot with a team, and I, you know, ejected a magazine, and it fell on the ground. And I said, "Pardon me." And Pal said, "You're dead." I go, "What?" And he goes, "It's some very colorful language." He's like, "You're dead."
Yeah.
He goes, "What are you? You know, that's crazy. I mean, you're exposing yourself. You're not back in the fight. You went through all the stuff." He and the other guys on the team are absolutely mind-blowingly good gun instructors. And anyway, so it's stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. And that's why people can relate to this because, like I said, it's not, you know, there was a knock at the door. It was my friend, the retired SEAL, you know, who brought a case of grenades over. I don't know anybody like that.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you right now, you've actually had an effect on both of our lives. My friend here owns 4 different firearms, and they pretty much match the descriptions that you have in the book, including his AR-15. So,
well, I have a lefty one because I'm left-handed and I don't want to get hit in the face. But, so yeah, it was great having you on, Glenn. You have my phone number now, so if the collapse happens, shoot me a text and let me know too.
Yeah, before the phone, you know, before all the cell towers go down.
Yeah. I hope we have warning of it, but yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Glenn. We appreciate it.
And it's a great honor. I've really enjoyed interviewing you.
Thanks, guys. You guys have a great podcast.
No, you too.
Thanks. Talk to you later.
Adios.
Bye.
Wow, that was Glenn Tate, ladies and gentlemen, out there in podcast land. And what do you think, man?
All right, let's wrap this mother up.
Yeah.
That was a great interview. Had a great time.
Oh, absolutely.
This room is burning hot without the air conditioner on.
Yeah, I had to have the air conditioner off because I really did not want to interrupt this. It's going back on. Before we wrap up, I'm just going to go ahead and throw in that if you want to advertise on this podcast, which, as you can tell, is probably going to be getting a lot more listeners, please contact James at survivalpunk.com. He'll cut you deals if you want to barter with precious metals, bitcoins, or various things. Also, tune into our sister podcast over at ramblingspodcast.com, where you can hear a couple of funny guys rambling and rabbit chasing. My celebrity invite for this week is going to be a Patriot Nurse of YouTube fame.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to. Well, I have her email. Actually, I have her phone number too. So I'm gonna try to get in contact with her and
please do that because we're just striking gold left and right.
Like, yeah,
it's three people that I've invited onto the show now, all of which have showed up. So Patriot Nurse, you have an open door invite onto the show, and I think that's pretty much gonna do it this week for the Survival Punk Podcast. I'm Mike,
and this is James,
and just always be prepared.
DIY to survive, brothers.